The last of the Ten Commandments is distinct from the rest in several ways. Structurally, it's in the second five, but it stands out from the others. After the clipped language of 6 through 9, all fitting into one verse, do not kill, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not bear false witness, this last one suddenly takes up a whole verse to itself. Lo tachmod beit re'echa, do not covet your neighbor's house. Lo tachmod eshet re'echa, do not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant, or his maidservant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. The verse itself is a strange construction. It looks at first as if it will continue the clip style from the previous commandments. Do not covet your neighbor's house. But then there's a break in the text, a parshas duma, mid-verse, as if the Torah were pausing to consider something, and then restarting, beginning again with the same language, do not covet, and then a list of 6 more things not to covet. Finally, as if the list suddenly proved insufficient, the verse ends with a catch-all, or anything that belongs to him. When we compare this formulation to the slightly different wording of the Ten Commandments when they're repeated by Moshe in Deuteronomy, we find some additional features. The order of coveted objects is slightly different. His wife and his house have switched places. And there's one additional item on the list, his field. But most notably, there's an extra verb that appears after another Parshas Duma break in the text. Lo tachmod eshet re'echa, velo titave beit re'echa. Do not covet your neighbor's wife, and do not become tempted by your neighbor's house, or his field, or his manservant, or his maidservant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to him. The second instance of do not covet, lo tachmod, in the original commandment, now appears as do not become tempted, lo titave, a reflexive verb whose root, aleph vav he, is another word for desire, one that's sometimes translated as appetite or hunger or temptation. So are these just two ways of saying the same thing, or do we now have 2 acts that are forbidden? In Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam counts these 2 verbs as separate prohibitions. He explains more fully later in the Mishneh Torah, to commit an actual act of chimud, of coveting, one must actively and successfully pressure someone into giving or selling the desired object. Chimud shiyesh bo maase, coveting requires an action. To transgress the act of becoming tempted, on the other hand, simply requires internally desiring something that belongs to someone else. Ve'en tahava ela belev bilvad. Temptation takes place in the heart alone. Why then are both of these desire verbs woven together into the 10th commandment? And what state of trouble are they together warning us against? To understand that, we would do well to turn back to the Garden of Eden narrative, where both of these roots appear for the first time, and both in reference to trees. In chapter 2 of Genesis, just after Adam is formed from the earth, we are told, "Vayitzmach Hashem Elokim min ha'adamah kol etz nechmad." The Eternal God sprouted up from the ground every tree that was desirable, nechmad, to the sight, and good for food, and the tree of life in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Here, the term for desirable, nechmad, which shares the chet mem dalet root with our word for covet, applies to the general category of trees, kol etz. That description seems to extend also to the 2 notable trees mentioned afterward, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge. 7 verses further, however, an explicit distinction is made between the general category and that last tree. Mikol etz hagan achol tochel, from every tree of the garden you may eat, but from the tree of knowledge of good and bad, do not eat from it. Kol etz, every tree is permitted, just as kol etz nechmad, every tree was desirable. That suggests that things can be inherently desirable without being forbidden. Desire itself is not the problem. The trouble with desire begins in the next chapter of Genesis, when the snake enters the picture and begins trying to convince the newly formed woman to eat from the forbidden tree. When she explains that God has warned her against eating from this particular tree, the snake brushes aside her concerns and lures her with promises of enlightenment. This tree, he says, will open her eyes and provide her with godlike knowledge. With those suggestions in mind, the woman takes another look. In her vision of the tree, the word nechmad appears for the second time, but now it's preceded by the first appearance of that other language for desire. Vatereya isha ki tov ha'etz lema'achal, v'chi tavahu le'inayim, v'nechmad ha'etz lahaskil. The woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a temptation, a ta'ava, for the eyes, and was desirable, nechmad, for understanding. So she took from its fruit and ate, and she also gave to her man, who was with her, and he ate. This description of this tree shares some phrases with the general category of trees we saw above, but with some new terms added and shuffled around, we're being invited to note a contrast, a shift in perception. Immediately, the emphasis is on the visual experience. The woman saw, not tasted, but saw that the tree was good for food. As she set her gaze upon it, it then became a ta'ava, a temptation to the eyes. Ta'ava is a word that will be later used in Tanakh to describe a hunger for food, but here, it's the eyes that hunger, to see more. What was initially merely admired has now become difficult to resist. Now, that original word for desirable, nechmad, appears again, but it has shifted to describe not just the visual beauty that all trees have, but the unique properties of this tree. These are properties she cannot see, but can imagine based on what she's been told. The phrase is desirable for understanding, nechmad hu laskil, a word that refers to the work of the sechel, the cognitive function. This expression of desire is fixated on a specific thing, the one thing that is forbidden, and it's a desire to gain more intimate knowledge of that thing, in part because it is forbidden. Having arrived at that sort of desire, she took its fruit and ate it. So far, everything in the verse has been in the heart alone. And now, however, an action, a ma'aseh, has been taken, and a transgression committed. The path of desire ran from the eye to the mind, and from the mind to the deed. The Rambam, back in the Mishneh Torah, describes a remarkably parallel movement in the laws of theft. Hatava mivia lidei chimud, vachimud mivi lidei gezel. Temptation brings one to coveting, and coveting brings one to theft. His use of this terminology holds up well across texts. He's clearly referring here to the various components of the Tenth Commandment, but he could just as easily be describing the first humans, the first temptations, and the first theft. The Tenth Commandment itself, in summoning these two verbs from the Garden of Eden, is surely hearkening back to those first human encounters with desire. The language of chimud, coveting, here in Parshat Yitro, takes us back to the first usages of this verb and reminds us that desire is not inherently bad. The world is full of desire. But a particular kind of obsessive desire, fixated on one object, can eventually lead to trouble. The coveter, in the scenario described in the commandment, begins, like his foremother once did, by looking. He's gazing over at a neighbor's house. Nice house. A pause and a break in the verse as he stares and his mind begins to turn. Then his gaze drifts over to his neighbor's wife. Interesting. Who else and what else is over there? He surveys the property. Soon he's becoming overly interested. The need to know more, to consume or possess what is not his, overtakes him, and before long, he cannot resist, and he will reach out and take, violating any other commandment that stands in his way. When Moshe then restates the Tenth Commandment in Deuteronomy, he adds an extra verb, another reference to that scene in the Garden of Eden, moving the problematic moment a step backwards in the progression the Rambam mapped out for us, from chimud to ta'ava, from action to thought. He wants to emphasize to the children of Israel that the trouble with desire begins before one ever considers taking an action. It is the rumination of the heart, the willing indulgence in temptation, that sets off a chain reaction that eventually leads to an act of transgression. Moshe knows this pattern well, having witnessed the people indulge temptation many times in their journey through the desert. Indeed, the only place we have seen the word ta'ava appear between Genesis and Deuteronomy is once in the book of Numbers, when we are told, the people hitavu ta'ava became tempted by temptation and soon began to fantasize about the fruits of Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons. Soon they're calling out for a return to Egypt, provoking God into punishing them with a deadly plague. After a mass burial, they depart from the site, naming it, in memory of their failure, Kivrot HaTa'ava, the graves of temptation. Now that their journey has come to an end and Moshe prepares to give the people all the laws that will help them build a new society on the other side of the Jordan River, he's thinking about that tragedy in the desert, and also about the tragedy in the garden. He wants to remind these people, as the 10th commandment is there to remind us all, that prohibitions alone will not be enough to keep them safe. They will also need to attend carefully to the complex workings of the human heart.